Year-end HR is chaos. Performance reviews, retention battles, compensation package decisions. Engagement cannot be assumed. Motivation cannot be demanded. And I have got the guy who solved this when building a billion-dollar business. Stephen J. Manning, let's go. I'm excited about this. It's a big topic. And I'm really excited to hear about your insights in how to engage employees and motivate them through really the toughest time, I think, in history right now in the workplace. People are scared. They're not engaged. They're not being aware of basically the cultural changes that are happening and need to happen as well. And we're at a really big, big turning point in my particular, my personal opinion, especially with all these new language models and how they've been upgraded and how jobs are not just changing, they are disappearing. So what's your view, Steve? How do we deal with this, with the pressure of all of this, these performance reviews being, you know, performance reviewed and all of this? What's your sort of take on that?
First, good afternoon, Nathaniel. Thank you for doing this. Massive topic. We all have had this experience as employees. Certainly, we're all employees one way or the other. When we work for ourselves, we're employees. And family, friends, and people that report to us, people report to us. We've all had the experience. Here we are at the end of the year. It's Thanksgiving, big deal here in the States. Oh, and then we have Christmas and Hanukkah and a new year, and people feel this cacophony of emotional noise coming at them. Some people look backward and say, not the best of years for us. I've been challenged. We all have challenges. If you don't have challenges, you're just a barely functioning imbecile. We all have challenges. And it's just different degrees and how we deal with them. And then the job, which most of us have to deal with. And, you know, how about Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, when you just had that job review and it was not particularly great? And that Christmas bonus you were hoping and praying for, worked for, it's not there, or it's really, really diminutive. You know, that great Chevy Chase movie that's a classic, where the whole family is expecting him to get this great Christmas bonus and ends up getting a turkey. Now, you can eat the turkey, but you can't pay rent with it. Now, so, you know, this is a very age-old problem. And how to solve it? Well, there's, you know, 1,000 books on sale on how to solve it. You can find one at your supermarket. One of the things that we did some time ago now, and it's something I counsel people still to do, is to understand the psychology of, I finally got that promotion. I finally got that raise. And I got that bonus. And the euphoria lasts 1 or 2 days. And then what sets in is the, okay, is that it? Not all there is? You mean I got to wait another year to do this? And how acute is that at Christmas time? Because, you know, by the time you get that bonus, that raise, I think 95% of us have already spent it. And then all you have is the expected happens or disappointment sets in. One thing is that we did in our little company, and by contrast to most of your clients, Nathaniel, our company was small. I'm relating to when we had maybe 5,000 or 6,000 employees. And in context of your clients, your IBM types and Intuit types are small, but still, that's a little company hit in the bees ultimately. But so somebody had a brilliant idea, and we actually tried it for a couple, 3 years to modulate, change it. So we decided to award bonuses October 1. Why? I don't know. But we had a bonus structure. And it was half of it was performance-based, specific matrix. And the other half was corporate to minimize risk of loss, maintain a positive cooperative attitude at all times. Soft stuff. Hey, boss, how am I going to get paid on that? That's our privilege as bosses to decide. So we would then throw the bosses out. October 1 came out of just on the calendar. Why? Because it wasn't December 20. And then, good or bad, there's a reaction to it, and then it dissipates, typically on the negative side. And then we said, so now we, like many companies, we have our salary reviews and performance reviews on the 19th of December or thereabouts, because of course, after all, you have to have a company, a holiday party, and then nobody wants to work. We work 24 hours a day during Christmas week because it's a very important week for us, but nobody wants to work. So then you lay that on your employees, and what do you get? That's it. By and large. Oh, thank you. I worked for 3 years to get this raise and promotion. Okay, I go home. Everyone's happy. And by midnight, you're saying, do I have to work 3 more years for the next one? So we said, let's not do that. So we now separate bonuses from salary, from performance reviews, salary reviews by a couple months. Well, that didn't work out particularly well doing Christmas week, essentially, a week before. So we said, why don't we do it differently? So we then separated those two pieces, performance reviews that happened to be on anniversary of employment. So we had performance reviews every darn day.
Okay.
It's complicated, but okay. That's cool. So separate that and give people incentive to proceed. Now, if your anniversary date happens to be after bonuses and all that, you need to take those seriously. And then we had salary reviews. Separate them. Ultimately, we ended up with separate bonus awarding of bonuses, separate reviews and salary reviews, which was still, we accomplished one thing. We didn't create happiness and disappointment the same day, the same amounts. Very complicated. Of course, you know, the psyche of being an employee, which I relate to quite directly, you know, and then as a boss, I had explained to me one day when I was grousing about something, and I said, I don't understand how you're not upset by this. All these people are upset with you, and this is what they're saying. And my boss said, you know, Steve, if I worried about what people think about me, that's all I would do. I have to worry about people being here to complain about me. I think that's pretty heads up stuff. You know, when people complain about me, it's because they still have a job here and I'm working harder than they are. Anyway, you ask a very complicated, complex question, which gets into a whole world of the psychology of being, hey, complaining about the boss is an occupational hazard of being an employee. So let's set that aside. You know, I've had bosses, not that many actually in my life. Most of my bosses were clients ultimately. But as I grew up, I had two bosses. I had two bosses for 20 years, partners. You know, did I complain about them? All about every day. Did I appreciate what they allowed me to do every day?
Of course.
Did I complain vociferously to them? Usually 9, 10 o'clock at night when they didn't want to go home. Of course I did. And every time I did that, they showed me, pointed me out the window and pointed out the cars parked out front. You're not doing so bad, are you now? Okay, I got it. You ask a very, very complex question with very refined answers.
It's big. It's a big topic because it's retention, right? It's retention, it's motivation. And those two things are connected quite deeply, aren't they? And all it takes is for a manager to just mismanage the people beneath him or her, and they're just going to leave anyway, right? And that's the thing, you know. And you know, a lot of salespeople are really demotivated with things, because what happens is, certainly in technology sales, is they get this massive bonus, right? But then the deals take maybe 2 or 3 years to go through. And then what a lot of these companies do, mentioning no names, is they just fire, they literally just fire the people before the bonus comes up. And then they're like, oh, well, Yeah, don't worry. You're not going to get that, but don't worry. We're going to pay you X, Y, and Z to just don't say a word about us.
That is one of the reasons why God made lawyers. But
yeah, true, true.
You know, one of the things that it just befuddles me, and I've seen it, heard it, talked about it for years and years and years. You have a marketing executive, saleswoman, who by definition has a quota. This is what we expect you to do. And when you're given your quota, you will go home crying. You're not going to get there. And then they give you a draw against your commissions. And you sit there 2 months into it and you owe the company money. And the company reminds you every single month at the review meeting, we can't get too far into us now. You got to perform. You can't be owing us that money. Okay, so now you're putting that level of stress on a man or woman who theoretically is working their butt off to make those sales. It's okay. Now, here's the worst part of all that scenario is Nathaniel Schooler makes a sale to a big old company here. He works on it for 6 months a year, makes that sale, and it's a big opportunity, and he works on it every day, develops it. And all of a sudden, it really comes through. It's doing really, really, really well. And here comes at the end of the year, we sit down with him and say, Nat, that is a hell of a find. Great business. Well done. And then we take it away, make it a house account.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? The more money you make, the more money I make.
Yeah.
But that is one of the things, and to diverge just a moment here. As you know, I do an hour and 45 minutes on conflict resolution. And one of the things that people just don't get it, it's the self-sabotaging conflict individual.
AI is rewriting the rules of business. For non-technical leaders, the risk of becoming obsolete is real. But you don't need to panic and you don't need to learn how to code. My name is Nat Schooler. I'm an ex-IBM futurist, and after 500 interviews with global executives, I've built the definitive blueprint for career success and survival. Influential Visions shows you exactly how to stay irreplaceable when AI can replace pretty much anyone else. No complex theory, just proven strategies. Subscribe to Protect Your Professional Future and start your $1 trial to Monday Influencer at the link below. Your competitive advantage starts now.
There are lots of other performance metrics that, you know, are important, right? So as a human resources, chief human resources officer, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to report on what these people are doing. So obviously their manager is gonna be involved with that. Their file is gonna be in your office, on your computer as well. And you're gonna be able to say, oh, okay, so they had this amount of sick days this year. They had this, they had that, they had an argument with blah, blah. They contacted me because they had an argument with someone else. So there are going to be all these other metrics that are really quite difficult to deal with. So it's all about education, isn't it? Like to wrap it up and put a nutshell on it, it's about creating a culture of open-mindedness and having this amazing educational kind of environment where people want to engage with each other. They want to help everybody. And that's the biggest problem that I see. When I talk to a lot of corporations, people in huge corporations, they often say to me that the culture absolutely sucks, if I'm perfectly honest.
Well, it really you sucks. Know, yeah. It's interesting that I'm fundamentally a marketing guy. Okay. Bottom line, that's where I started my life, has been marketing, advertising, and then all the whole corporate governance stuff that comes with it. Yet, one of the more important lessons I've learned, and I'm asked this question all the time, what were the turning points, you know, when you were a young guy and so on? One of the more important lessons I learned was, in fact, from an HR guy. Our little company grew to where we now were hiring senior level executives. And one day we went out and hired this man as our senior VP of human resources. Just the loveliest, mild-mannered man, elegant. Well, he was a firefighter back in the day, meaning he was a union negotiator. And I'm not going to get into what those people really do, because that's a world, unless you see it, 99% of people I know don't get how that process works until I saw it. But we got him out of one of the biggies. We got him out of a Fortune 20. And, you know, cruise by my office. Are you kidding? I was on turbo boost. I had two gears. Turbo boost and kill it. I was young. I was pushing very hard. And this nice man walked by. How you doing, Steve? I'm doing great, Jane. What's up? Not much. Then he looked at me and said, no. Can you imagine the river with the brown leaves in the fall flowing down? And Jane, I'm not big on riddles. He'll come to you. And then there was a time when I had a boss, my chairman, who was, he was interesting in many ways. One day he came to the office and he would start late. He would start early, 11 in the morning. By then I was thinking of going home. And he was in a terrible mood, just awful, because he was mercurial. He was the loveliest man. But, and about half an hour later, I went by his office. I said to him, Jeff, for a minute. What is it? I said, do you understand that I have a problem? My problem is you're in a bad mood. What's that got to do with you or anybody else? I said, I have a company that's just standing still. There are people talking in the hallways. I've gotten four or five calls from different people, different levels, different buildings saying, is everything okay with the business? Why? Something happening I don't know? No, but, well, Ron seems to be really upset today. So I said to him, I don't care whether you didn't like your cereal or you didn't get any run today or your wife was upset. But the company's kind of like waiting because you. I said, how about being demotivated? I figured he'd fire me, but didn't. Okay, so about an hour later, he took his partner and they went for a stroll across several buildings and the production facility. How you doing? Good morning. What a great day. And I said, I cruised by 3 in the afternoon. I said, thank you so much. Our production seems to be picking up today. The lesson I learned from Gene, the HR guy, ultimately I was thinking about in context of, you know, the ivory tower thing, is that when you have a facility that's got, I don't know, 300 people, 1,000, whatever people over there, they're running a third shift, and they have to do this, they have to do that. And all they can think of is those people up that damn ivory tower, they don't know how this really works. So I learned this basically from two people, John Barrowcliffe, I talk about all the time, who taught me that I need to understand the difference between who I was and what I represented. And then Gene Roberts, and I said, okay. So for 2 months, 3 months, when I took over the operations of the company, because I didn't have a choice. It's not one of those things, you know, like, hey, would you mind running operations too? I run the management group and advertising, marketing, media. Well, you can do that too. You'll figure it out. So what if it's another 100 hours a week? So at 6 in the morning, I'll take a walk through 3-4 of our biggest buildings. I say, hey, how you doing? Shake hands, meet people. And I do that at 2 in the afternoon, different shift. And I did that at 3 in the morning, a different shift. So I listened to my HR guy who said, don't be an ivory tower kind of guy. Like, over, that's over there. You just, it's on paper. You have people running this, but no. That's really the most motivating thing you can do, is to show your people that you're in it with them. Good, bad,
of course.
You're just in it.
Of course.
And by the time you get around to at week 3 and 4 and 5, you now know 30, 40, 50, 100, 200 people, 300 people. You shake hands for see, and pretty soon, and of course, it took 3 months to get them to call me Steve instead of boss. But and then you begin to feel, and by the way, they appreciate, the workforce appreciates the leadership that's in the trenches with them, that sympathizes. Absolutely. Nobody really wants to work at 3 in the morning, even though the pay is better. Okay. And then you also, one of the great benefits of this for me as a young guy, and it's been true for my rest of my career, was I also developed a social conscience in the process. Those are not employees. That was not a group. That was not the Baba department. Those were people. It was Bob and Maria and Jose and Joe and Mary Ellen. And those were people who had arms and legs, kids, rent payments, food needs, health needs, needs to belong, needs for security. And when you begin to, and you'll forgive me for this, but it's a very sobering day that when you take all the analysts the company had, all these people just awesome at pushing numbers, data, and so on, decision-making models, you pile them in a couple cars and take them to a production facility. And then you walk through and, hey, how you doing? Hey, Steve, how you doing? And say hello and shake hands with 40, 50, 60 people. And you introduce all of them. And you walk out and say, now, let me give you the life lesson. Next time you make a mistake, a third of those people will be unemployed for 2 weeks. You can fix it, but they're going to be unemployed.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I think when you look at these businesses, I think the most important thing people can do is go down there on the front line and actually work alongside these people. Like that's a real big thing for me. Like, I love that. I think it's really important. And what would you say to someone who's like waiting for their review to happen, and you know, and it goes badly?
Well, the most, I think, most common reason, here's a scenario. Nathaniel, this is your annual review. There are 6 things that are expected of you, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And here are the performance benchmarks, because it typically works that way. This is what you're supposed to do. And then one, this is fine. This is on a 1 to 5, this is a 5. This is pretty good. 4, you can improve this. Okay, well, you know, this, you really got to improve this, but it's still a 4. And then this one, and I'm afraid number 5, that you really did not perform at all. Ooh. And the most amazing thing that happens umpteen times every day is that when you say, I'm afraid that is really impacting your review, your rating, and your salary, bonus, etc. And then when you have an employee who looks at you and says, I'm confused. I didn't know that was expected of me. I didn't know that. Okay. It was never made clear to me that I was supposed to do that too. And then a smart employee says, you can't be sure, had I known, I would have done that. Well, you didn't. How can I possibly perform, do something that I'm not aware I'm supposed to? Often, a failure in that entire scenario is a lack of expectation. You did not communicate the expectations properly. So the employee does not really know they're failing at that, and you did give it. And then, too, they're failing, but you don't have enough reporting relationships, or you ignore them, or you can actually fix it. You need to make that employee successful. It's up to you to make them successful. Then they have to perform. Okay, so, and then I failed. My employee didn't. I failed. Ultimately, I lose more than that person does. And then, of course, the big kahuna, which is when you bring someone in your office, say, I'm going to do something for you that in time you'll appreciate. Oh, boy, that sounds like cheap television, doesn't it? No, it's not. I've come to the conclusion that this is not a good fit for us and you, this job. So here's the problem. This is the requirements. This is where you're at. This is what you have demonstrated you can do. Does not cross foot properly. Does not resolve properly. So one of the things has to happen. We need to figure out how to fix it. If we can't, then we need you to move on. And that is the best decision for you. Go find someplace that suits you. Because this is not working for us. It's not going to work for you. And you will remain disappointed. I've had the dubious distinction of having that at some level. And people react more two ways. I was expecting this. I should have done something about it, or for the rest of my life, I will hate you with a vengeance. Okay, fine. But here's what we're willing to do for you as you leave here. And if you want to talk to our smart people on what you might do next, glad to do it. Glad to give you the right recommendations in the right places. So, most of the time, when you have an employee that's been there a while underperforming, is you hire the wrong person for the wrong job. Or they just really don't know what's expected of them, or worse, they just don't care. Okay.
Well, they just don't like it either.
The part about I don't care, I don't get it. You know, it's like you wake up in the morning. And yawn throughout the damn day, not because you're tired, because you're bored. You're not excited about anything. And most people don't roll out of bed early in the morning and say, whoopee, I got to go to work. Some of us wake up at 3 o'clock instead of 4 because we really want to do some stuff. But it's also happens to be a mindset. And as you know, leadership is what you and I talk about a great deal. By the way, in my little world, going back and certainly going forward, leadership absolutely has a human resources component. Now, it's professional human resource. It's not like, okay, I want to develop this great human resources skill. If I devoted the rest of my life doing that, I'll always be a talented beginner. No, I'm going to find another gene, another net, someone who will tell me this is the paradigm of human resources today. And this is how it works. So let us step on our own toes. I'm a leader, nuts and bolts, success, career, business. And then I have to learn the soft skills in addition to superior management skills. There's no such thing as superior management skills without the soft skills that human resources brings into the formula, period. You know, and if you are an enlightened leader, you understand that. And, you know, the thing I never had to hesitate to say, you do know that without people, business would be a snap. Nothing to it. So you don't want to manage the people properly? Knock yourself out. And then you find yourself in a totally dysfunctional environment where nobody really gives a hoot. They're picking up a paycheck, and they'll get another job. It's okay. I am so humbled to say that as I grew in our business, we didn't have people in all levels of management who are not trying to do better, who are not pushing a little harder, who are not proud in doing more than they was expected of them.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, though, isn't it, right now? Sorry to interrupt you there, but...
No.
We're at a point where everything is becoming draconian. Everything... In many businesses, becoming draconian, there are, you know, monitoring systems for employees on their machines, monitoring probably on their phones as well, I would imagine. And we're in an age of AI whereby people are, you know, if they're not given access to AI models, they're going to use their own. So we're at a very risky time right now whereby sensitive information can get out, you know, and it's becoming a lot more difficult for both people who are working and also human resources managers, because they don't understand the changing landscape. Neither understand the changing landscape. The management don't understand the changing landscape. Even the technology providers and the people within tech do not understand the changing landscape. Even the ones at cutting edge, right? Like people that I know that are doing seven jobs. I know a chap, he's in marketing. He's employed by a bank, large bank, and he's doing marketing. And the human resources department are slow because for some reason, someone is dragging their heels because they don't want him to look very good within the business because he's new, right? It's a small-ish team, but he's using AI and he's doing seven people's jobs himself, right? Using AI. Think about that. So in terms of the way that the environment is changing, it is changing so quickly that actually, you know, People need to, firstly, in my personal opinion, have an open mind. They need to understand the fact that actually what is happening today is not going to happen tomorrow, right? And the day after. And unless you have an open mind and your management team is actually assisting you to learn all these tools that are relevant to the business, you're basically going to be out of work. And this is my message to people, because AI is not going to replace you. Someone who uses AI better than you is going to replace you.
Absolutely. Exceptionally well said. That's, Nathaniel, that is so core to where the world's going. Don't become a technologist, become a good user. And that's just so well said. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm scared of the future for some people. I'm scared for the people who are, you know, perhaps sitting in their performance review, they've had a difficult year or two, they're really stressed, they don't want to embrace AI within the department because they think they're going to lose their job. Well, you will lose your job I've just said why, but you will lose it if you're listening to this and you're like, well, yeah, but you know, I don't want this tool to take my job. It's like, but the tool is not going to take your job. I'm interviewing a lot of HR professionals at the moment, and so far I've learned so much and made so many amazing things. And they are really positive about the future, because what they've realized is that they can optimize every single thing within their job. So it's not a matter of AI taking your job. It's a matter of, if you don't learn how to work with your technology department to optimize your job, then somebody else who's within your same department is going to basically be promoted, and they might end up replacing you. And these are the things that, if you're sitting there in your performance review and you're like, yes, but you know, whenever we talk about AI to you, you don't want to know, and you're dragging your heels and this, that, and the other, then just have an attitudinal correctness moment. Have a conversation with yourself and think, well, you know, you're not a Luddite. If you're a Luddite, absolutely, then you've got a problem.
Tying that to a question you asked, which I know I did not answer. So what do you do looking forward to, okay, when it was terrible review or bad situation? My advice to anybody wants to hear it, I don't care whether you think you're the superstar or the slacker in the team, the organization. To me, it's all the same in one respect, particularly if you have some concerns, misgivings, you're being ignored, you're not being seen, you're going through the routine, but that's not where you want to be. Number one, that's not where you want to be. I want to progress. I want to do well. I want to make more money, blah, blah. I don't want to get fired a year from now. Next layoff, I'm safe. So what do you do if you listen to me? You make the absolute effort, perhaps casually or formally, to seek out your boss. When you're walking down the hallway, you see your boss. Good morning. Good morning. Boss, Bob, whatever, Mr. Johnson, I know you're very busy. Do you think I could get 3 minutes of your time for a little advice? Now, I don't know one decent boss, much less reasonable good, will say, I don't have 3 minutes for you, whoever you are. Now, Sandy walked down, sure, when can I come by? Okay, come by this afternoon. Call Vicky, she'll tell. Okay. You cruise by and say, Mr. Johnson, I'll only take 3 minutes of your time. I like it here, like my job. I'd like you to do better. I like to do more. Please tell me what am I doing well and what should I do better? Or more. To which the boss is going to, the direct boss will say, yeah, Bob, you're doing a good job. I think you should do a little more of that or not. Or, you know what, when I look into it, and I promise I'll get back to you. Mr. Johnson, thank you. Appreciate your time. You're gone. You just put your face on the radar of Mr. Johnson. You're not one more person in a row of many. You're the one that is showing commitment and forward-looking stuff, if you will. Intent to just do better. Therefore, everything you are now doing has a nicer color to it. Good guy, good woman, trying hard, working hard, and wants to do better. Or the boss will find that unit and get your manager to say, I just had a visit with John, ran into him in the hallway. He said he really loves working here, appreciates it, love to do better. Let me know how. Hey, sounds like a good guy. You got your eye on him or her? I promise you, golden. You don't have to pay me for this advice. Just think kindly of me when you do it.
Interesting. And also, you can run that through to interdepartmental relationship building, right? Because that's really important when you think about it, because your department might be shrinking, right? It might be shrinking because you're getting replaced by AI, because actually they're going to lay off a lot of people within your particular remit, right? It doesn't matter what it actually is, because there are certain optimizations that are occurring within these businesses that you're not going to be able to stop. But the closer you look at this business that you are in, the more equipped you're going to be to move into a different role. I mean, I know people within a lot of corporations, and chatting to a friend the other day, and he said, oh, about 3 weeks ago, he said, oh, they're making people redundant in my department, and I'm really worried. I'm just about to buy an apartment. Me and my wife have got two small children, etc. Right. And I was like, well, okay, man, just don't worry. Just take it easy. Yeah. And you're going to be okay. So what they did, they offered him another job in another department dealing with another product, right? Because these corporations, they have so many resources. And if you maintain that positive mental attitude, right, and you keep your eyes open and you show willing to adapt, right, they're gonna help you because they don't want you to suffer. This is the point. They want to help you, right? Mm-hmm. And you know,
moreover, you and I talk about this as a way of life. You have to outwork and outthink everybody else. At least you have to try every single downsizing or a company that survives as opposed to complete implosion. In every downsizing, managers of units, departments are asked, okay, who are the people we need to save? And then we may be eliminating the whole department, but Nathaniel and Mary Ellen really are the real performance here.
Oh,
let's find
them
another job.
Thanks, Steve.
Literally, every downsizing, the question is asked, who are the superstars that we need to save?
Yeah.
And let's find them. Let's keep them, find them someplace else to go, because we don't want to lose those people.
But also, I mean, even if that business is not downsizing, right? You may just be thinking to yourself, I'm not really happy in this department. I really want to move up and do something different within the business. And actually, maybe I want to do something more creative. You might have skills in acting, right? Or sales that you're not utilizing because you're actually in a product management role or you're in another role. But in fact, you've got the most incredible skills. So what does that mean? It means you need to get out in front of the more important people within that business who have power. So you need to keep your eyes open. Who is in power in that business who can help you to move departments? Because you can build relationships. If you show willing, you say, well, oh, I've got this great idea. Maybe we do this. And you go and you implement it, right? You can move around as a resource. There's so many different opportunities right now to just do different things. I'm quite excited about the future of work. I'm excited with the sort of teams that are just all over the place that then come together and then create these projects, right? Like project teams. That's something that you and I were talking about, which is big in the freelancer space, like project teams. So as a freelancer, right, which I was for many years, you come along and you're like, well, I really would love to work as part of a team and I'd love to do this, this, and this. And then if you find a project that excites you, you can just jump into this sort of team. And that's the same with what you used to do in business, which I think is fascinating, how you promoted the janitor, the head janitor, to working as a creative director part-time. I just find that totally blew my mind when you told me that. I just think it's a brilliant story. Do you want to just quickly tell that story before we wrap up?
We in the little company I grew up in, we created something called the R&D department, and that was a group of people that were in charge of creating of coming up with new promotional ideas, or promotional incentive ideas, merchandising ideas. You know, games of skill and sweepstakes and premium incentives, and they get very complicated and many. And this was a department in a company that did not have a budget, in a company that we budgeted for paper clips. You know, you have to justify that the company car needed tires. That was a review process, but this department did not have a budget. Because the whole idea was just let people test whatever they think. And if they test 10 things that are terrible, the 11th one pays for everything. Anyway, so part of the team was the two chairmen, the VP general manager, VP of advertising, me, and four people that were anywhere from the guy who created 7-Up back in the day to two kids just out of college and another one that's been with us for 3 or 4 years, young people who had some idea. And one day we had a janitorial staff, because a bunch of buildings, and the head janitor's name was Art. Art was a man in his late 50s, 22-inch waist, 40-inch chest, spiky hair. And every day at exactly 10 o'clock, march in my office, look around. Very official kind of guy, squared away Marine, by the way, and look around and look at my two trash cans and make sure they were emptied, right, by the staff. And he wore the dark green pants with a lighter green shirt, Art head janitor on the chest. He looked like he walked out of a dry cleaners every day, Marine. And we had this conversation 5 days a week when I was in the office. How's it going, Steve? Going well. Everything okay? Everything's fine. How you doing, Art? Just making a clean slate of things with which you do a Marine Corps turn and march out the office. Except one day, when he marched, I turned around and said, I don't know what you people are doing. I said, the janitors, I said, Art, what are you talking about? Well, you know that thing you guys are doing on the catalog thing on the back? I don't get it. How does that make any sense? So I said, I don't know. I pumped out 10, 12 million of those orders this year, and I've mailed 4 or 5 billion of those. I don't know, but the janitor's telling me that we, the smart guys and girls, do not know what the hell we're doing. So I said, what are you talking about? Why would you do that instead of doing that? So I said, I didn't have an answer for Art other than, we had creative meetings Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 11 to 1. And then 1 week out of the month, we would go out of town, lock ourselves up in a hotel suite, and do this creative stuff. That was routine. Next day at a creative meeting, I said to the brilliant group, I said, can somebody tell me why we're doing this instead of that? And they all looked at me like, huh? We've done that for, 25 years? And I said, you know, the newborn, every joke is new. Oh? I said, well, Art seems to think that's a really bad idea. In fact, what he seems to think, we should do that. And they said, Art who? I said, you know, Art, the janitor. Oh. Okay, so that day I made Art creative director on par with everybody else because he made more money. Art told me that he never actually finished high school. Am I sure I know what I'm doing? I said, I think so. Yeah, clearly have. He said, you know, Steve, I'm just more like your customer than you are. Maybe I know. I said, great. And he said, but you know, I can read and write, although never finished high school. I said, I don't care. And I said, from now on, you're creative director. And he laughed and I said, sure. Are you sure? I said, yeah. And maybe you're going to be away for a week every month or so. And really? And I said, you're going to be in a room with this team. So, oh, really? And I said, I only have one requirement, which is what? That every meeting you come to, you wear your uniform. So there we were in the Waldorf Astoria or the Fine Fancy Restaurant, and Art janitor uniform. And he said to me, see, it's Barrowcliff. Never confuse who you are with what you represent. I said, that will be a reminder for me. How dumb was I for the preceding 10 years?
It's crazy.
But it shows you, though,
that diversity, right? Diversity is a strength, yeah? Because we need to be more like our customers. We need to understand our customers, right? And if we're not like our customers, we are living in this ivory tower. And that goes for everyone in management. They need to understand what people go through every day. They need to understand what life is like for people. Otherwise, how can they understand what the business needs to do, right? It's just interesting. The whole thing's really interesting. And, you know, and I think the more, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I only have one comment on that, which will get me kudos or somebody across the chair over my head. I'm not sure. I learned early on, courtesy of a couple of these people I mentioned, about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Now, let me put that in perspective. I'm all for diversity and inclusion. Equity for me is a matter of merit, period. That's how I grew up. I never made a dime. I didn't earn at least twice. No one's ever given me a nickel. And if I made two dimes and the other guy made only one, it's because I just not worth it. So I'm absolutely, diversity is fantastic. Diversity ideas. I mean, as long as they're qualified, not for just the sake of it, but the diversity of ideas, diversity of behavior, thought, and all that is a good thing. Inclusion, what do you want to be, exclusionary or moron? Inclusion is a great thing. Equity, look, man, I had nothing when I was a kid. I had less than nothing. In a room full of church mice, we were borrowers when I was a kid. Do you know what? Equity to me is earned, period. I don't care what you are, who you are, where you come from, what you smell like, what you look like.
Yeah, I agree.
You're earning it. Great. You're my guy. You're my woman.
You're my person.
I don't care that you lied about going to high school. I could care less because there were two MBAs in the room also. I don't care. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. That's the point. I mean, and it's interesting because I've got a friend of mine. He's a hacker, right? He's like a one-handed hacker. He lives in he's got a wheelchair. He lives in India and he's a one-handed hacker, right? Because he only uses one-handed keyboard. Because his other arm doesn't work very well, so he's doing this hacking, and I'm like, and if you think about it, he's not going to be as fast as most people that are typing on a keyboard, right? But his brain is different because it works in a different way, right? Because he's more methodical, okay? So he might see things that are different to what other people see, and with AI that's now come on, that is probably a superpower. Because he's not going to need to type as quickly because he can use AI more, right? And I just think that right now we're at a point where people either invest in their futures, or they're going to be going backwards, and they'll basically just end up and just having to retool and re-engineer themselves. And it might take 2 or 3 years. So my advice, if you're watching this and you're sort of thinking, well, okay, I'm a bit stuck right now, I'm going to have a bad performance review, or you're out of work, things like this, you need to just take the time to focus on what your skills are. Watch our productivity series, because that will really help you to be productive. Because actually, once you work out what you really need to do to move your life forward, and you start doing that on a daily basis, that's what moves the needle, right? And it doesn't matter if you have a performance review or you don't, or you're in work or you're not in work. Tomorrow's another day. Today you give your maximum, and then the past is history, right? You don't need to worry about that. You just need to move forwards in the direction that you want to be going, in my personal opinion.
And I will have to add this because I do. If you read Monday Influencer and the abstract, or listen to them, I urge that you do that every week, and do that with a highlighter. Listen to it. If something tickles you, go read it and do the highlighter. I aim to, at the very end of this year, which is coming up, to go through the last 15 issues of The Influencer, which, of course, we remember fondly having done them. And I will aim to highlight those. The stuff, the 2-3 sentences, points that really like sledgehammer to the brain, and highlight those. And now, mind you, we authored this stuff. We're intimately familiar with the stuff we talk about. You know, we don't make it up. I intend to come up with my friends call the executive summary. And I aim to come up with 20 lines out of 30, 40,000 words that I will paste right here on my desk next to the most successful ad I have ever created in my life. This is a rough copy of the most successful ad I've ever created. It's a piece of paper this big that pulled a major company out of bankruptcy and got them sold for $150 million in 1986. And it was a little piece of paper like this. The copy is 3 sentences with 1 piece of graphic. But I aim to do that. And I really don't tell you this because if you subscribe to the Monday Influencer and you go through any issue, we do a Monday Influencer the first Monday of the month. Then we do abstracts the other 3 Mondays of the month. Those are limited, more specific. If you can't come up with a list of 10 things any given month, you should cancel the subscription anyway, and we'll send you black roses.
I mean, also, you know, to add to that, the content resource hub is absolutely excellent. The resources in there are excellent. We've got some fantastic people that are signing up and really digging into that at the moment, and I'm really excited about that. I think if you want to direct your life, then you there is not a better resource, in my personal opinion, that there exists, really, to tell you the truth. So, you know, just enjoy it. And if you haven't signed up and you want to check one out, drop me a message, tell me what you want to learn about. I might be able to dig out something that's really relevant for you, and I'll happily send it over. No problem at all. So thank you, Steve. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thanks, people.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks.